What's up, everybody? Great to have you here once again with us. We're back at it with lovely and juicy news that will shock some of you. So without further ado, let's get into it. Welcome to the latest episode of Back on the Podcast. So Josh, what are you telling me, bro?
Bro, I'm shocked. Like, I know normally I should have prepped for this episode like maybe yesterday, but I prepped just like 2 hours ago and I'm still opening my mouth from the news I just read. Like, I cannot believe my eyes. Like, oh my God, what?
I don't know what that is, but I can't wait to hear it. What is it?
Okay, so let's start from, because all the crazy news is linked with the UEFA Nations League. So let's start there. We saw the final between France and Spain. A very entertaining game with Spain taking the lead and France responding in next to no time. What did you make of the game as a whole?
I think the game was very entertaining to watch. And this is what we said in the last episode. What Luis Enrique has been able to do with that Spanish side is very, very impressive, and you should be giving more applause, because some of all those players, they looked very, very good. I think they played better than the France team, but we've seen this time and time again, when the French side go down by one goal, they end up winning the game. And I think all in all, it was a very good performance from the Spanish team, but they just came up short because of the lack of talent up front.
Yeah. It's interesting you said that they always go down, or usually when they go down, they still win the game. I think it's becoming a habit, and it might be a bad habit because you might not be able to come back all the time. France, in the last two games, the semi-final and the final, they didn't play for like an hour. Like, they just did nothing. They went down, and they had to go down before they woke up. And I feel like if they play against the better sides, apart, like, no disrespect to Belgium and Spain, but if they play against sides who can actually take their chances, then I worry about this habit of waiting to go behind first, because France did absolutely nothing in that first half. And it was just a few minutes before Spain scored that France actually started playing. So, yeah, it's good to be able to come from behind, but you don't want to make it a habit.
Yeah, exactly. I know we'll touch on the second goal for France, but what I just want to highlight was the way France, they actually play. They play mostly as individuals. You see some people passing to some people they actually like, instead of the actual best options
but the link play between Mbappe and Benzema, I mean, that's something to behold.
I know Mbappe likes Benzema, but sometimes there are positions where you see Kylian should actually give the ball to someone else. He won't want to give it. He's still looking for Karim Benzema. It's a good thing, but sometimes it becomes a bad thing when there are other better options to actually give the passes to.
Okay, so yeah, I think that's a fair point. Now I want to go to sticking with Mbappe. You mentioned it a bit earlier. The second goal, quite controversial, because Mbappe, for people who haven't seen it, so let me just try to describe it. So Mbappe was in an offside position, and then Eric Garcia stretches to intercept a pass, and then the ball just grazes him, like he barely touches the ball. And then they say that that's a new phase of play, and so he has played Mbappe offside. What rubbish is that?
I think we've seen this from time. Like, it's something that occurs once in a while in every season. I think I've seen it, Man United. I think, was it Chelsea that they faced, or Liverpool? I can't remember who, but I think it was Rashford. He was on an offside position and they actually scored a goal. That rule has been in place for a while now. I'll just quickly explain it just before you go. Like, so now, the key thing to know about the rule is intention. So now, Eric Garcia made movement towards the ball. So that he made an intentional movement. He tried to play the ball, so that in that is innocent, and in that innocent move that he's trying to make, that intentional act that he did, intentional movement he made toward the ball, Now it now means that he himself has made Mbappe onside because he intentionally played the ball, which he now missed. That's the interpretation. He missed it. And now the team fell kindly for Kylian Mbappe. So now, in that, if you now change the phase, it now means that the offside has resetted. Just think of it like Mbappe is offside, but now Eric Garcia has given Kylian Mbappe the ball. That's the way they interpret the rule. But I think it's something that they should change going forward because at the because you can make cases of if the contact isn't strong enough, the goal shouldn't stand. But in some cases where some people are arguing from now saying if the ball deflected from Eric Garcia, that's different because deflection means that there was no intention from you actually want to kick the ball. So now, but this one, there was an intention from Eric Garcia. If Eric Garcia didn't intend on kicking the ball just grazed him and went to Kylian, then Mbappe will be offside. So it's just the rule and it's just where it is at the end of the day.
Okay, thank you for clarifying the rules because I tend to get the rules a bit muddled up because they all make no sense. So let me start from here. Like you said, it's the rule, but I think the rule should change. So I'm not blaming the referee or the VAR for giving the goal. It's in the law, so they have to give the goal. But I think common sense should prevail and UEFA or FIFA should change the rules. That's one. Secondly, I've seen a lot of nonsense on social media and in the news where some people are saying that Eric Garcia should have known that Mbappe was offside, so he shouldn't have gone to touch the ball. How on earth are you going to know if a striker is offside? It just takes a second for them to make the pass. And are you going, as a defender, are you going to risk Mbappe being onside and you just leave the ball to go? No, you have to defend because you cannot be 100% sure that Mbappe is offside. So I don't buy what some people are criticizing Eric Garcia for. I don't know what they expected him to do. He was just meant to stand there like a statue or what. Though he has been standing like a statue for Barcelona and not defending well recently. But at least the first time he tried to defend well, it went against him. How unfortunate.
Of course. You just have to bring Barcelona into this. Of course. Well done. But what I'll just say is all those comments on social media is not something people should be paying too much attention on because if they actually know how football works, all those things happen in split seconds. So there's no time to actually start thinking or so you have to just react as the game comes. So I don't think Eric Garcia is the one to blame there. I just think they were just unlucky with the decision. That is what I'll just say at the end of the day.
To the third place match, which for me was very pointless because, first of all, I've said it countless times that I don't rate UEFA Nations League as anything. But I have to be fair and say that it's better than all those pointless friendlies they had before. So, in that case, it's worth something. But overall, as a trophy, it's still nothing compared to the World Cup and the Euros and the likes. So, we had Italy and Belgium playing out, and to be honest, it looked like both teams did not even want to be there because both managers didn't even care about the match. We saw a whole host of changes, key players rested. At the end of the day, Italy won because, if you ask me, the Belgian lineup just showed that they were not interested in winning.
Yeah, Roberto Martinez made huge changes, and looking at it, I think they were still good enough. What I would say is, I didn't watch this match to the final whistle. I didn't see the match to its entire.
I don't blame you. How many people would have watched that match? I mean, what?
But what I would say is, from what I saw from the highlights and all that, I think Belgium, they were lucky. They struck the post, I think, three times with Carrasco and Batshuayi. So I think they were very unlucky. But all in all, I just think, like you said,
this subface. I'm crying for them. They struck the post three times. How unfortunate.
But what I'll just say to wrap up, yeah, all in all is, like you said, I don't rate the Euros. The Euros is just a glorified.
No, sorry, not the Euros. You mean the Nations League?
The Nations League, I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. Sorry for that. Like, I don't rate the Nations League. It's just a glorified friendly at the end of the day. And now we're seeing people now running agendas. There's this pop tweet that went viral after Benzema won it. So Guti, who is a Real Madrid fan, posted that it's common knowledge that the Nations League is greater than the World Cup simply because Ronaldo has won it and now Karim Benzema has won it. So,
of course.
So now you have people running agendas and putting the Euros
That doesn't even make any atom of sense. Like, not even a single iota of sense. The World Cup that has existed for years, decades, and the Nations League that just came so that some people who don't win anything usually might see something to win. So, I don't know.
Exactly. The good tweet was quoted and tagged in worst football take, and it went viral.
I mean, rightly so. That has to be one of the worst takes I've heard in a long time. But I guess that's what fans do, right? You just push agendas for the players and the club you support. Okay, so Courtois, like me, thought that this game was a very unnecessary game. He actually gave a long-winded statement at the end of the match interview. He said that this game is just a money grab by UEFA, that they don't care about the players. He talked about how they're trying to make a World Cup every 2 years and how there are games upon games, unnecessary, needless games, and then players don't get rest. And he said that they are not robots. I mean, I have to agree with him.
Yeah, we all know that these organizations, they are corrupt. All they care about is filling in their pockets. We are seeing what FIFA is trying to do, make the World Cup a biennial tournament that's playing every 2 years. So it's very shameful. And I keep on saying this is not the first time I'm saying this. The Super League is coming, whether they like it or not, because when shit hits the fence, yeah, the clubs we know that UEFA are not taking care of and managing the players and the way football should be run. So the clubs, they will take that initiative and start running things themselves. So that's what I think. I think the super teams will come together and Newcastle might just be one of them again.
Okay, that's a big shout from you, but I have to agree that the system, I think it's, will I say corrupt? Corrupt might be too harsh a word, but let me just say that they don't care about the players. Let me put it that way. They don't give a damn about the players and it shows with the way they run the calendar and everything. But I hope things will change soon because, I mean, we can't continue this way. Now, let me ask you, Leonard. You watched, at least, okay, you said you didn't watch the last game fully, but you watched the four games, the two semifinals, the final and the third place match to an extent, right? Yeah?
Yeah. I can say I watched the two semifinals and the finals to its complete entirety.
Okay, very good. So now, what if I told you that Sergio Busquets was named player of the tournament for these four games and then Spain finished what? What did they finish?
Second. Yeah.
And then you had Karim Benzema scoring in both the semis and the final, and you had Mbappe scoring in both the semis and the final, and Mbappe also assisting in the final as well. So I'm wondering, how can you have a goal and assist in the final and goal involvement in the semi-final as well, and then Busquets gets player of the tournament ahead of you? How does that happen?
Was he player of the tournament? I was thinking they gave Busquets player of the final.
No. Of the tournament. So because even if they gave him of the final, it still makes no sense because Mbappe played in that final and Benzema played in that final. And for me, it was a toss of a coin between both of them. So how did Busquets even come into the conversation? I would even have taken Oyarzabal over him, if I'm being honest.
In the final, Busquets played very well. I think he played, he was one of
he
the key players.
Well. Did he play better than Benzema and Mbappe?
To me, Mbappe didn't have a good game. Mbappe scored, yes, but he didn't have a good game. He kept on doing unnecessary things. But to me, the French best players were actually Karim Benzema and Paul Pogba. Paul Pogba played well in the final. Oh, he actually bossed the midfield. But to answer your question, when you look at the tournament to its complete entirety, I think it would be fair to give it to Karim Benzema, who has been in red hot form, especially for this French side, because he has scored clutch goals. He scored the clutch goal that actually brought them back into the game against Belgium, and he scored the clutch goal that actually made them still in the win the game against Spain. So I think Karim Benzema, looking at his performance, especially in the final, because I think the Spanish team actually bossed that game. The only players that were in it, to me, Griezmann was not there. Griezmann was not in that final at all. The only player that I actually saw that actually played well was actually Karim Benzema and Pogba. Then later on in the game, I think Lloris came up clutch for them. But that, out of those are the names that actually stood out for me. But for the Spanish team, I can call different players that played well. I think Oyarzabal, like you said, played well. Rodri played well because he closed down the ground. Busquets was very, very good. I think these are the kind of performance we should be expecting to see from Busquets, only if he had a good manager for Barcelona. Laporte was very, very good. He was able to mark and close down spaces. Azpilicueta was very good as well. So you can see that the Spanish team, they were better all in all in different categories. But the standout player for me in that French team was actually Karim Benzema. I think without him, they might actually not win that final or even win the tournament.
Thank you for that very elaborate answer, because all I was expecting you to say is that Busquets was in no way, shape or form, even in his own imagination, supposed to win the award. So for me, that's that. It's just a joke, a big fat joke by UEFA. And this is why I don't rate awards. And later in this episode, we're going to talk about the Ballon d'Or nominees, which I think is complete nonsense. But stay tuned for that if you want to hear me rant. So now we have, okay, so we recall, so just to say, Donnarumma was booed by AC Milan fans in the semi-final, because the final, obviously, Italy hosted these four games, and the first semi-final that was between Italy and France, was it?
Yeah, it was the first one was Italy and Spain. Sorry, so Spain knocked Italy out.
Italy and Spain. Oh, that shows how much I care about this UEFA Nations League. So Italy and Spain, and then Donnarumma, obviously former Milan player, AC Milan player, he was booed by the fans because it was at the San Siro. And guess what he did? Just guess.
I don't know what's happening.
Do you think he gave? He gave a speech on social media saying how much he loves AC Milan after the match. What do you think he did?
These days, everyone is giving speech, their own speech. Maybe he gave his own speech.
I wish he gave a speech, because what he did is 100 times more ridiculous. This guy actually got a tattoo of the AC Milan badge because the fans booed him. Like, a legit tattoo. Like I'm not even joking. Like, this is why I told you that I was dazed and I was opening my mouth when I saw this stuff. He got a tattoo of the club and said that he was at AC Milan for 8 years and he loves the club and he always loved the club. And what nonsense is that? You've left the club. If they are booing you, are you so light-hearted that he got to you so much that you have to try and appease them? Players are too soft.
I don't even understand how that came about. I'm trying to. I'm scrambling right here.
It makes no sense. No zero.
I try to see if I can see the news, because. Okay.
you think I'm making it up? Yeah. Because I was also in shock. I had to check. Like, did this news outlet just make this up, or is this legit? Like, I couldn't even laugh. I was just shaking my head when I saw it.
Oh my God! What is
so now?
Going
everyone that leaves a club and they boo you, just make sure you get a tattoo of your former club so that the fans will love you again. Just pathetic.
Okay, I'm seeing it right now. And yeah, I think they said what I'm reading here. They said it's temporary, but he's trying to get the permanent one. Is that what I'm seeing?
Man, let's hope it's temporary. I mean, I think he's just clutching at straws here. It makes no sense. It just shows that he has a very fragile, what's the word here? Like, his emotions are very fragile. If he's hated by someone, he seems like the kind of guy that wants to be loved by everybody. So if you boo him or if you criticize him, he's probably going to be butt hurt or something. So he's too soft. I mean, I know him as a great keeper, or let's say a very good keeper who is going to be great, but this just shows us more about his character, and I think he's a soft person. He's too soft.
But before we move on, I just say, like, hope Bruno Fernandes and the rest that are taking notes. So whenever you miss a penalty or get the red card, just go and tattoo or something instead of writing letters.
I mean, they could just get I'm sorry tattooed on their body so that every time they miss a penalty or do something stupid, they can just post the same picture of the tattoo on social media. Just, I don't know. I mean, saying you're sorry is 100 times better than this, because what do you expect him to do? He wasn't born to play for just Milan. He has to leave. AC Milan too signed players from other clubs, don't they? So why can the fans not accept that their player left? And then why does he have to? I mean, I'm getting worked up just thinking about it. It's just crazy. It's just, I don't understand. So please let's just stop talking about it before I lose my mind.
All right, let's move on then.
Okay, so a bit of other international action. We saw We saw Germany are still perfect under Hansi Flick. The first game was hard fought. They had to come from behind, but the second game was more like it, a 4-0 win.
Exactly. That's what you expect from Hansi Flick's team. I think the second game, it was difficult for them to break them down in the first half, but in the second half, it was very easy. And I'm happy for Werner getting to goals in the international break.
And one of the goals is actually a very, very good goal.
Yeah, I saw. I think it was the second one where he bent it to far corner. So that is the name, far corner.
Back on the podcast. Okay. So, just to touch on Ronaldo extending his record of international goals. I think 112 now. But that's not even the important thing for me, because they played against Qatar. Of course, Ronaldo was going to score. The Portuguese manager, Fernando Santos, said before the game, he said that Ronaldo needs minutes, that he needs play time. So he's going to make him play the match. And I'm like, what play time does he need? Was it not just the first half against Everton? He didn't start. Why is he talking like Ronaldo has been on the bench for ages?
I don't understand the play time talking about. If Ronaldo needs play time, then imagine players like Donny van der Beek, what they actually need. I don't understand what Fernando Santos is trying to say. But what I'll just say is Ronaldo once again discovering nations, just like Dora the Explorer. Now he has scored against Qatar.
Are you disrespecting a whole oil-rich, I mean, Qatar, come on.
No, I'm not disrespecting, but they're not a footballing nation, so just how it is.
Fair enough, but they all count. Now to the South American scene, we saw Argentina, they failed to score for the first time since June 2019, they failed to score in their first qualifier. But at the end of the day, I think they will be happy with what they did, because they won the second game, didn't they?
Yeah, I think looking at Argentina now, I think they've stayed gelling, holding the ball. Link-up play was very, very good. And once again, Emi Martinez has to be one of the best goalkeepers. I think he should be like, if we're the rating top 10 or so,
Emi Martinez should be top 10, definitely.
Because a year ago, I had so many good chances. I think Suarez would have been so frustrated because Emi Martinez was on top form and wasn't to be beaten on that night. Then all of a sudden, Argentina players came to the party. Messi leading the charge, got the first goal, and from there the floodgates opened and they won again.
Okay, so then obviously is by law and the way the world works, once you talk about Argentina, you have to talk about Brazil. It's like when you talk about Messi, you have to talk about Ronaldo. So Brazil, the first game, they won 3-1 against Venezuela. But that wasn't the interesting thing for me. The interesting thing was Casemiro not playing the match. Now, can you guess why Casemiro did not play the match?
Logically, he might be injured.
Yeah, hey, but like, where do you think he had the injury?
Maybe because I've seen one where Ronaldo couldn't play because he had sore throats. So maybe it was something similar.
Okay, he had a tooth infection. So I don't know, man. But they didn't miss him because they won 3-1, like I think I just mentioned that. And then the second game, they failed to score, where they had Neymar back, but they played a goalless draw. But I mean, they don't need to win any more games. They are virtually qualified to the World Cup.
Yeah. But all in all, like Germany, they are still the first side to qualify for the Qatar 2022. So I think on paper, they will still need to rack up more wins, and definitely they will win some of their games to come.
Okay, so usually, normally, we won't talk about Switzerland, no disrespect to them, but like we won't talk about a Switzerland and Northern Ireland game. But we have to talk about this one because guess what? Jamal Lewis, who plays for Newcastle United, who are the talk of the town at the moment, but sorry, I digress. Jamal Lewis was sent off in the first half. Now, Leonard, please, can you just tell our listeners why he was sent off?
So, initially, he had a yellow card. Then, as the game progressed, he then went to take a throw-in. So, you know where the defender...
Sorry. In what minute was this? I believe this was the 37th minute. Am I wrong?
I can't give you a definite answer because I can't remember the I think it was
36 or 37th. But sorry, please continue.
So he went to take a throw-in. So he was now shuffling for who should I give the throw-in? Who should I throw the ball to? Who should I throw the ball to? And he didn't even take time. It's just like maybe 5 seconds later, the referee got frustrated and gave him a second yellow and off he went.
Okay, so thank you. So now, I'm trying to process in my brain. Okay, at least I have a brain. Now, I'm trying to understand how they can bring a referee that doesn't have a brain to the field. Because how can you say someone is time-wasting in the first half? And not in the 46th minute after you've added 1 minute extra. You think he's wasting time in the 36th minute. Now, I believe that's what stoppage time or added time is for, depending on what you want to call it. So, if you think he's wasting time taking the throw, why don't you add a minute extra after the 45th minute and make it 46 minutes in the first half? How is it possible that a referee, a FIFA licensed referee, I'm already getting worked up, I'm getting angry. How is it possible that you give someone a red card for wasting time in the first half? Please make sense of this for me.
At the end of the day, you know, I've said this, the power referee has is so much. They can actually relegate a team and strip titles away from people. That is the price of incompetence. Every time I keep saying it, referee, they're actually the ones that decide where money goes to in a club. So, like I've said, if a club get relegated, the money they're supposed to receive, they don't get it because of some referee giving a bad decision that they were not meant to give. And now we're not seeing it in international stages. It's the same thing we keep seeing. So now if these guys that are top professionals can actually do their job correctly, then there's no one is safe, because these are things that, if, for example, if this referee was to play World Cup final and he gives this kind of atrocious call, just tell me, he has caused a nation.
There will be death threats. It's not like I condone such, but I'm 100% certain that there will be death threats.
At the end of the day, I just think they should be doing better, and FIFA should watch who they appoint as top level referees in high tier games.
I don't know. I just remembered something that I was meant to say after the Courtois incident. Now, Rafael van der Vaart said that Courtois is whining, like he's not making sense, complaining about the games. What do you have to say to that?
But I see the thing is, whenever all this battle comes up, like obviously there are people who come out to protect themselves. But at the end of the day, I just think Courtois, what he said, he was not wrong in what he said.
Van der Vaart was a player and he played at the top level for quite a while. So you expect him to be more compassionate towards the player's plight?
You could say that, but at the end of the day, things have shifted. So it depends on who is feeding his pockets now.
Oh, yeah, that's true. He now works with the media. So I guess he might not even mean it. He might just be doing this to be controversial and to get in the news, and which he has succeeded in doing. Now he's in the news. Voila. So... I don't know, man.
He has made an episode in the Far Corner podcast.
I mean, we just made him popular, didn't we? I just find it odd that a former player would come out to say this. I think if it was an analyst that never played football, I would understand, but not a former player at the highest level. I'm shocked, honestly.
And that is what it is at the end of the day. When you have people like Gary Neville and his brother saying things on Sky Sports, so you expect more of these.
I know that you're not the biggest fan of Gary Neville, and I think I understand why. Because, and it's not just him, it's a lot of these former players who they virtually just, I think what's left is just for them to put on the jersey of the club they used to support, just to come to the studio and let's know that, okay, I'm supporting Chelsea, I'm supporting Man U, I'm supporting Liverpool, because it's the former players of all these clubs, they just come out and just basically support their club instead of analysing football.
Exactly. Gary Neville thought it was easy. He went on to be a coach at Valencia, almost relegated them. So now he has humbled himself. I went back to just being a pundit. So I think they should better take a leaf out of Gary Neville's book and understand that the job ain't easy.
Okay, so speaking of humble or humility, Wijnaldum is certainly a humble man right now, because he has been speaking to the press and is complaining that, I think he said that he didn't expect it. He never expected it, man. Like, he thought he was going to walk in and waltz into the PSG starting lineup, but he forgot that there are a galaxy of stars there.
To me, what I would just say is, I think Pochettino is the problem. Because when you have Neymar, a front three of Neymar, Kylian, and Messi, that the front three, when you look at it on paper, it looks very good. But when you actually study the game, Messi is quite, he doesn't have the legs to run.
He doesn't walk, off the ball, yeah.
Yes, Messi's walk rate off the ball isn't as top level, for being honest. And same thing with Neymar as well. Even Kylian these days, this is why I've been hammering about Kylian. Kylian these days has picked up bad habits and is off the ball pressing, isn't
from Neymar. I believe you said from Neymar, right?
Yeah, he's picking up bad habits from I don't know, I don't want to point fingers on Neymar.
No, but off air you told me Neymar. Come on, say it with your full chest now.
I don't know why I told you off air, but maybe I've
okay. Now you're making me look crazy, right?
I don't know what you're talking about. So what I'll just say is, when you look at the front three doesn't do a lot of the ball of the ball work. So a player like Wijnaldum, that's where they thrive on, because they walk, they do the dog's walk, and they actually make sure that they press and get the ball and hold the ball. That's so that they can actually get the ball back and make sure they give it to the attacking players to do the damage. And that's what Wijnaldum thrives on. So I think at the point when Pochettino actually starts using his head and understanding that he needs players that can do that work, and Verratti alone can't handle such a huge task.
To be fair, Paredes and Idris Aguirre, they work very hard as well, don't they?
Honestly, I haven't seen much of Paredes this season. I've seen Idris Aguirre. I watched him in the Manchester City game, and he played very, very well. He even scored a goal. The goal was just an added bonus, but he had an all-round performance. I think there was a tackle where he actually almost got De Bruyne sent off. And I think that if it was the other way around, Idris Aguirre would have been sent off. Another atrocious call from a referee. So, but what I'll just say is, Idris Aguirre has been very, very good. So I just think maybe one of those should just be patient. All in all, I think he will get his opportunity when the time comes.
So, if you're picking a midfield three, from what you said, definitely Wijnaldum and Verratti make it, right?
If you're picking a midfield three, definitely the one that comes into the list, for sure, if he's fit, is Verratti. Then you can just switch between Wijnaldum or Idris Aguirre. But right now, I think Idris Aguirre is on better form than Wijnaldum. That's why Idris Aguirre is starting.
I agree with you about the better form. And I'm all about, when you go to a club, prove it. Prove why you're there. Don't just expect to start. So I hate players coming out to whine and say, well, the coach promised me play time when I was coming. So if he promised you and he has backed out of his promise, make him start you by what you do on the training ground. You prove that you deserve to start, and you start. So I don't get why he's coming out to complain now. Are we meant to feel sorry for him when he's collecting a load of cash every week?
So what you're basically saying, man up and do your job.
Exactly. I mean, it's the same thing where, at least, I'm glad that Donnarumma, I don't believe he has come out to complain yet, because he's having it very tough at the moment, fighting with Keylor Navas for the number one shirt. So, I mean, he's also within his rights to come out to complain as well, isn't he?
but I think it's different for Donnarumma, because Donnarumma knows that at the end of the day, he'll be the number one.
but how much patience can you have if you are a keeper that just won the, not just keeper of the tournament, but player of the entire Euros, and now you're going to the bench? I mean, you know that in 2 years' time, it will be your turn, but can you really wait for 2 years?
And you're spot on, you're spot on. It's hard to argue.
So, now, Nuri Sahin, we all know and we love him. His time at Real Madrid didn't go according to plan, or his time at Liverpool. But remember his time at Dortmund under Jurgen Klopp, a fantastic player. And now, he's what is maybe the last of a dying breed. He's now a player manager. I mean, when last did you have one of those?
I think the last one we saw was, you know, Ryan Giggs. And he took over.
I think the last I recall was Vicente Kompany at Anderlecht. Or even Wayne Rooney at Derby just last year, wasn't it?
That's true.
So, yeah, the club is now a player manager for his Antalyaspor in Turkey. So, wish him best of luck. And it will be interesting to see if the club is losing, whether he puts himself on. And maybe if he makes a mistake that leads to a goal, whether he's going to blast himself in front of the entire team. So, I mean, it's just an interesting dynamic. And we don't see a lot of managers or players doing managers' work at the same time, because I think the duty of managers has evolved so much over the years that it's now a more... What's the word I'm looking for? Like, it's more... is a bigger role, let's say. So before, you were expected to just come and just put the tactics. Maybe back in the day, you tell the players, okay, this is the lineup, this is our formation, go out. But now you're involved in on off the pitch work, you're involved in transfer dealings, everything. So most managers don't really have time to be players as well. So it's interesting that he's going this way.
Yeah, I wish him best of luck.
Exactly. So now, another man, I think a man that needs best of luck is Ronald Koeman, because he's so bad now that he has been... I'm sorry, I needed to just laugh. He has been banned. Is banned the right word? Yes, he has been stopped by the club from giving interviews in the media. Are they afraid that he's going to say more nonsense?
He's a man that always says nonsense. For example, I'll give you an example. Like, when you see Luis Enrique, when he was asked about the referee decision on the offside thing, he said, I can't comment on that, but only what I can comment on is if my players played well and if what we actually, like, it was just saying things that were in his control. But if it was someone like Koeman in that situation, what he would say is, Eric Garcia shouldn't have done that. He would blame Eric Garcia. He would blame everybody. He would blame himself. So, you know, Koeman's mentality is a very, very poor mentality. And, you know, quite frankly, how I feel about Koeman. So, it's good that you take the mic off him before he leads Barcelona into for that hole.
But, you know what is funny to me? Yeah? I'm completely in support with you that Koeman has said some not-so-smart things in the press in the last 3 weeks or so. But then the person that is banning him says more outrageous things. And I'll give you just an example of what he said just a few days ago. Laporta said that he wanted Messi to play for free when the club could not afford to renew his contract. What sort of nonsense is that?
Honestly, when I read that, you know what came to my head? So if you watch Scooby-Doo, when Scooby-Doo, at the end of each episode, when they catch a ghost, when they remove the marks from the ghost, I think Bartomeu is the one in charge, not Laporta. If they remove Laporta's skin, you might actually see Bartomeu's face, because some of the things Laporta has been saying, it doesn't make any sense. It sounds like a drunkard sometimes. Like, Messi should play for free after taking 50% wage cut. I don't understand it. Like, you should... very soon I'll be hearing demands like Messi should play naked or something. Like, it doesn't actually make any sense.
But to be fair, not to be too harsh on him, let's calm down a bit. He said it in a way like, so he was doing an interview with a Catalan radio station. So he said, it was more like a passing comment where he was like, he was just dreaming, like he was just hoping. Like he knew it was probably not going to happen, but he was just hoping it to happen. So it's not like he's blaming Messi for not playing for free. He was just hoping like a child on Christmas Day.
Yeah, you should keep hoping like a child on Christmas Day, that, because Santa is not coming.
Oh God, but okay, if you ask me, yeah, I think that Barcelona should just move on from this Messi thing. Like when I say they should move on, not just on the pitch, because obviously they've been playing without Messi, but off the pitch they should move on. Laporta should not talk about Messi again. Coman should not talk about Messi again. The board members should not talk about Messi again. This is a new era. You guys have blown it. You've messed it up and you didn't renew his contract. So why keep reminding the fans of your failure? Why don't you just move on and stop talking about Messi in the press?
Exactly. Everyone should move on. And I don't know. Sometimes they use Messi as a shield to deflect problems. So I think this is what they are doing once again.
So Newcastle. We've mentioned them once or twice already on this episode in passing. Now, if you've been sleeping under a rock, Newcastle have new owners, £300 million bid from the Saudi-backed consortium and Amanda Staveley and the Ruben brothers. So, obviously, we know that this, and we talked about it in the last episode, that all this stuff comes with usually a managerial change and some player changes. Some new players being brought in. So, can you guess who the mastermind they are thinking of hiring is? Just guess. I'm sure you're thinking like Antonio Conte or someone glorious like that.
Maybe they want to bring in like a German coach, because these days German coach are hot cakes now.
Okay. Sorry to bust your bubble, but they want to hire Frank Lampard.
Of course.
This is me wondering what the obsession with former players is, because we've seen Pelu fail, as harsh as that may sound, Pelu failed. We've seen Lampard himself fail at Chelsea. And so why don't you just look for a good coach? Must it be? And then what is happening is that he's a player that retired recently. That's what they are going for. So they are not going for people like Frank Rijkaard that played a long time ago and has coaching experience. No. They don't want experience. They want the hype that was with them when they were players. So can you explain to me how Frank Lampard is a better coach than Steve Bruce? Please, just help me.
Honestly, I can't tell you that. But what I'll just say is, like, Steve Bruce have had so much experience. He has done it in the league, he has managed. Exactly. At the top level, he has had so many games under his belt. But what I'll just say is, at the end of the day, I think these are things that we'll see. They will be linked to so many people, so many things that they're not supposed to be linked to. So I just feel, at the end of the day, they should just calm down. This is what I said to you. I think they should just leave Steve Bruce there, or they should bring someone that will just see the entire thing and make sure that the club stay up for the next 8 months. When the summer starts, they now re-strategize and start building for the project they want to, and that's bringing who they want. I think they should not rush just because they actually have the money and they can make the decision. They should not rush it. I think they should leave Steve Bruce there, just give him the tools by January so that he can actually make sure that they stay up for next season. Or he can bring in someone for the next 8 months that can steady the ship and make sure they are up, so that next summer, you bring in the key players you want to bring in, and you can bring in the top manager you want. So, because right now, their hands are tied, because it will be actually hard to price out any manager from any job they are currently in.
Okay, so what I think about this is, the sentimental part of me wants Steve Bruce to get his 1,000th game in charge. That would be against Spurs after the international break. But unfortunately, football is not run on sentiments, and he might be out of the job before then. But okay, let's say you do away with Steve Bruce. I don't think Frank Lampard is the right person to hire because he doesn't have experience of fighting relegation, which, if we're being honest with ourselves, Newcastle are in a relegation fight. They might be a very rich club now because of their owners, but they are still not a very good club yet or a good team yet. They are fighting relegation and you need someone who is used to that fight. I think Lampard is on the verge of killing his career because if you ask me why, I'll tell you that Lampard at Chelsea, Lampard only got the job because he played for Chelsea. There's no sugarcoating it because he was very inexperienced, just had the job at Derby and then got the job at Chelsea. Now, Lampard has had the taste of the highest level at Chelsea and he has failed. Now, if Lampard goes to Newcastle and fails again, tell me which other club will hire him. And the likelihood is that he's going to fail at Newcastle because of what I just said. He doesn't have experience of relegation battles. Now, some people might think it's nothing, but it's something because when you're fighting a relegation battle, the first thing you need to do at the club is to stabilize them defensively, of which we know that Lampard's and Chelsea's defense, like Chelsea's defense under Lampard, was absolutely abysmal. So I don't know if you're looking at it from that point of view too.
Yeah, you make perfect sense. For you to actually steady the ship when it comes to being in the relegation dogfight, you need to have experience there. That's why you can see whenever clubs are in it, they actually go for Big Sam, who is trusted and tested in that aspect because he has
exactly. You know, Big Sam was going through my mind as I was making that statement of like experience and fighting relegation. Like he's just the go-to guy.
Yeah, Sam Allardyce has huge experience in that, and I think he has only failed once, and that was last season. So
doomed to fail. I don't even blame him. They were doomed to fail.
Yeah, exactly. He came in late, and so I just feel at the end of the day, Lampard, this does thing that some people, when you look at them, like they don't look like people that will be good coaches. They might be fantastic player, but they don't look like this thing. Sometimes when people say laugh at Pillow, I just think Pillow was set to fail, and that's the same thing I keep hammering on Xavi. If Xavi takes back a job now, Xavi might succeed or he might fail. But to me, I lean towards.
I would wager that he fails.
I would lean towards the aspect of him failing because the job isn't a good job for him. Like the job is not good enough for Xavi right now because some of the players there, they seriously need to leave. It's the same thing I keep saying about the Juventus team. The Juventus team is poor. Look at Allegri still struggling with them. It's just the same thing. The team is so bad, you see that. There's nothing even the top managers can do except you refresh some of the players. So in the case of Frank Lampard, I just think he has tested the job at the highest level with good players, like you rightly said, but he didn't quite deliver. So I think it's a huge risk giving him the job. And I don't see it happening. But if it happens, man, good luck to Newcastle and they are 300 billion.
Now, you know the worst part about this is for Lampard himself, because let's take our mind back to when big takeovers have happened in the Premier League before. Chelsea, Abramovich bought Chelsea and the first manager was Ranieri before Mourinho. You go to Man City, the first manager was Mark Hughes before Mancini and the likes. So the first man who is usually brought into the club after a new owner is always inconsequential in the history of the club because you're not going to win anything because so basically how I explained it to someone, a friend of mine who was telling me that now Newcastle are going to be challenging for the league next season. And I told him that no, they cannot be challenging next season. That what I expect them to do, or what I would do if I was the one in charge, is to hire a coach that can fight relegation now. He saves the club. Then next season, if the club is not doing well, as maybe, let's say, December next year, you sack this person next year after he has already kept you in the league. Then you hire a better manager and then that one takes you to, like, maybe sixth place. Then you sack that one. Then you hire another manager that can take you to top four. Then you sack the one that gets you to top four. Then you hire the one that can win the league for you. So I've mentioned four different managers. And if Lampard wants to be the number one in that pecking order, then that's already failure because it's definitely going to be sacked without winning anything.
Yeah, 100%, I agree.
So, I don't know. It just depends if Lampard is so desperate to get back into management that he's willing to risk his entire career, put his career on the line. So, but at the same time, we wish him good luck, but I just don't see it ending well. Now, for maybe the biggest news of the last week, the Ballon d'Or nominees are out. You can see how excited I am by my voice because, well, I'm not. We saw some names that I look at as dodgy names. But before I say what I think about the list, what do you think?
I think at the end of the day, we all know who the top three were going to be. I think the top three is nailed on, but the top three, I think if you ask 100 people, there will be some discrepancies. But at the end of the day, like, some people will have many, many similar names together. But all in all, I just feel like there are some players, like two in my mind, that should be on the list, but they didn't just quite make it. So that's what I think about the list.
What are those?
So for me, I think Edouard Mendy should make the list. He made Chelsea very, very good. These days, you hear some Chelsea fans hyping up Rudiger, but they don't understand that Edouard Mendy is still one of the key person making Rudiger look very, very good. Then at the other side, I think Gundogan
making Rudiger look very good. Okay, that's interesting.
So the other person that to me that should have made the list was Gundogan. I think Ruben Dias and Gundogan, they were the key players for City last season, for especially earlier on in the first half of the season. De Bruyne was injured, and who took charge? It was Ilkay Gundogan. Gundogan played very well, fantastic player, and to see that he didn't make the list, well, I just think Gundogan should have made the list. That's just all.
Okay, so for me, let me mention people that should not have made the list first. So okay. You have people like Raheem Sterling, you have people like Simon Kier, you have people like Pedri, you have people like Luka Modric. Are you kidding me? Luka Modric. What did Modric do last season? What did he do? Luka Modric.
Nah,
and then, like you said,
I even don't understand this. Pedri was integral for Spain in the Euros, and Pedri was still integral for Barcelona in the league. And that's why this is what I would just say to end it. Everything is not about just GA and assist. You have to actually watch games to actually see how good a player is. It's the same thing about Gundogan. People look at Gundogan goals. Yes, he scored goals, but he was still brilliant. His performance, even Phil Foden, you have to watch them to actually
see the kind of game they have. Foden was actually nominated. Yeah, he was.
But that's what I'm saying. You have to watch these players. Now, anyone saying Pedri should not be on the list clearly didn't watch Barcelona last season, and clearly
just say me, because I'm the one
I'm not pointing fingers. This is not a podcast for pointing fingers. I'm just saying generally.
What? You just basically pointed a finger at me.
No problem. If you think I'm pointing the finger at you, then you have to look at the mirror.
Okay, now you know why I mentioned Pedri there.
Okay.
I don't want to go into Pedri. Pedri was very good last season, but I don't think Pedri was better than Gundogan. I don't think he was better than Mendy. You mentioned Mendy. I don't think he was better than Heung-min Son, although Tottenham were not so good last season, but you can argue same with Barcelona. And I think Ederson keeping a lot of clean sheets in the Premier League and Champions League and getting to the final, although he didn't win into City, should be there. Also, I look at Rudiger. I disagree with you when you mentioned Rudiger about being covered by Mendy. So that's how many names I've mentioned, maybe five. And I'll throw two more, or maybe three more. Luke Shaw was outstanding at the Euros and very good at in the Premier League last season. I'm not saying he should win it, but 30 names, I mean, Shaw should be there. I think also Jadon Sancho. Obviously, now Sancho is like a shadow of himself, but Sancho of last season should be there. And finally, I would say Cancelo was amazing last season. A fullback or a wingback who was playing in midfield at the same time. Like, he played two positions last season in every match.
I get what you're saying, but just like me, I'm looking at Mason Mount. I don't understand how Mason Mount made it. I'm looking at
I'll tell you how he made it. We know that this is all about trophies won, and Chelsea won the Champions League, and Mount was one of Chelsea's best players, if not their best player entirely.
It doesn't even make any sense, because to me, so, Mason Mount wasn't Chelsea's best player. Like, if you go around and ask, Mason Mount wasn't integral to Chelsea's.
But he won Chelsea Player of the Year, though. He won it, like, the club.
Who would they give again? It's the Englishman there, and he had some decent performances. So,
but no, you know where I would disagree with you? I would say that Rudiger from January after Lampard was sacked to end of season was amazing, but Rudiger didn't play before then, so you can't give player of the season to someone who played half the season.
Player of Mendy the season also, to me should have Mendy. Been Edouard Mendy.
I was coming to Mendy. Mendy also, the defense was in shambles, and also the keeper is part of the defense. So if the defense was in shambles for the first part of the season and you were good second part, you cannot give him player of the season for a good second half of the season. Same goes with Aspi, because they are all part of the defense. So, and then you're going forward, you look at Venom is firing, you look at Kai Havertz in shaky form. And so the most consistent player in Chelsea was actually Mount, when you consider that half of the season was useless for the defenders because they were terrible.
But it doesn't still give Mount his stay in that team just because he was simply consistent. Like, are we now giving award for consistency now?
I think
you have to be outstanding. Like, Ballon d'Or is outstanding players.
I think Chelsea lacked outstanding players in the first half of the season. I think if you ask anybody who Chelsea's best players were under Lampard, they will tell you Mount. And I think, if you ask for the best player under Lampard, they will tell you Mount. If you ask for the best player under Tuchel, then you hear names like, some people will tell you Rudiger, Azpilicueta, Mendy, Thiago Silva, Mount. So, the only name that will appear in both halves of the season is Mount. So, I think that's what makes him the best player overall for the season.
All right, fair enough. No problem. But at the end of the day, let me ask you, who is your top five?
Top five, we have Messi, Lewandowski, Jorginho. I think Harry Kane. No. Tottenham was so dire that I don't think he makes it. I think Erling Haaland, that's my fourth player. And I would take maybe Mo Salah as a fifth, maybe. I'm not sure. So,
My own top five. My own top five is very, very simple. My own is Messi, Lewandowski. Then I'll put Lukaku there.
I actually then forgot Jorginho, Lukaku.
Then Jorginho comes.
So remove Salah and put Lukaku there, because Lukaku won the league with Inter.
Yeah, then you can pick and choose whichever player you want. But I'll actually put Karim Benzema up there too as well.
Oh my God, I forgot Benzema. I think I need to remake my top five in the next
episode. No. You said it. You have to live with it. So guys, go after him. You have said his list. And you see how mid his list is. So go after him for having Paul.
The end of the episode. Thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you next time.
Yeah, peace.